from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In this age of Google Maps and GPS, will paper maps become useless? No, says David Rumsey. The longtime map collector has been digitizing maps for almost 20 years and opened the David Rumsey Map Center at Stanford University in April 2016. The center, which features more than 150,000 items, including now 70,000 maps accessible online, allows the public to compare centuries-old maps to their current-day locations to see changes in cityscapes, population, and housing, even shifts in land due to climate change. We're going to talk this segment with David Rumsey, who donated his entire collection to Stanford, and Saleh Mohammed, the center's curator, about how digitizing maps, makes them relevant today. And we're going to talk about maps in general. Welcome to the program, David Rumsey. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
And again, David Rumsey is founder of the David Rumsey Map Center at Stanford. And welcome, Saleh Mohammed. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
And Saleh Mohammed has the unusual title of head and curator of the David Rumsey Map Center. I only said unusual title because how many people have curators and heads of map centers on their CVs? Let me begin, if I may, David Rumsey, with you. And let's begin by talking about, I mean, this is a massive collection, and it's props to you for donating it. I think it's going to be a source of a great deal of pleasure and educational wonderment for many people for many years to come. Where did your passion for maps come from?
When I was about 4 feet tall, early, very early, I just loved maps. I collected them as a kid, modern maps, and then as I got older and got a sense of history, I collected old maps because I saw that they were stories of what was. And the fact that I did it so voraciously, really, in such numbers.
You were to maps like I was to baseball cards.
Yeah, you know, okay. So. Yeah, yeah. It's the collecting gene. They say it flips in your 30s often, and when it flips, watch out. So I collected hugely. What's so wonderful now is I can share it with everybody at Stanford, share the physical collection. And I, as you said, I've been sharing the digital online for, gosh, we've been online 17 years now.
Maps, you've said, are tailor-made for digitalization, and you want this to be accessible to the public. You want the public to share in it.
Totally. And they are tailor-made because maps are incredibly dense forms of information. You know, one map itself is like a book. A map of atlases is like a whole library. And a map center full of atlases is the whole universe. So we cover a lot of ground.
You do indeed. And I cover a lot of ground in preparing for the show and learn as much as I can about the topic and the people behind it. And I was interested in your background because you're sort of a kid of the 60s. You were a lot more than 4 feet during the 60s of height. You learned about, in a kind of collective way at Yale, I guess it was, about giving things away.
I did. Yes, I was very much a child of the 60s. I was at Yale all during the 60s. My first career was in art, really, until I was 30. Then I did business with an amazing man, Chuck Feeney, who is famous as a philanthropist. He was my model for giving things away. And then I was able to spend the last 22 years of my life volunteering and building the collection online and then ultimately giving it to Stanford.
And I should say, by the way, the proper term is digitizing, not digitalization. The latter means turning it into a digital business, whereas the former is just making it digital. And Saleh Mohammed, again, head and curator of the David Rumsey Map Center, digitizing is what this is all about. And that component, with all the special technology that's attached to it, makes this center really quite unique.
That's right. So All of the maps that David Rumsey has donated to Stanford, they have a digital component. They are all going to end up at Stanford's at the Stanford Digital Repository. So one of the things that's really attractive about this whole proposition is that all of the maps that we do a lot of scanning at Stanford as well, and David does his own scanning. All of that ends up at the Stanford Digital Repository, and the key about that, the key piece about that, is something Which allows every map that is scanned to have a persistent URL. So we don't guarantee permanence, but we guarantee persistence, meaning that in 20 years from now, 30 years from now, you are researching maps. You want to see if this map is still available and you want to cite it. That citable link will continue to prevail.
There's so many maps in this collection. I mean, sort of the mind reels that, despite the voracious appetite that David Rumsey alluded to here, what you've managed to get a hold of for the center at Stanford. I mean, rare maps and globes and wall maps and pocket maps, and the list just goes on and on. But some of the things I want to find out, you know, particularly what both of you especially like to highlight, but, I mean, you actually have the Lewis and Clark maps.
We do, actually.
Extraordinary.
Yes, we do. We do. In fact, it is on display currently at the center, along with the physical as part of the book. But we also have iPad Pros that are designed to stay near those maps, near those exhibits. So, for example, you're looking at the Lewis and Clark map, and you're looking at the tracks. Well, without a magnifying glass, it's really difficult. Even with a magnifying glass sometimes, it's really difficult to see those tracks. But behold, here's an iPad Pro, which has that map. And you can use the iPad Pro next to the map and explore both the physical right in front of you and the digital using the iPad Pro. So the center allows us to do these sorts of things.
You also had a passion for maps?
I did. I've always loved maps.
When you were 4 feet?
maybe about the same. But yes, I've loved maps all along. You know, I actually love geography. I love place. I like to learn a lot about place. I'm an armchair traveler. In the past, I have, I used to draw my own maps. I've drawn maps of the city of Bangalore, which is where I'm from originally. You know, because I knew it inside out, I would help people out. But yes, I would give friends triptychs when there were triptychs, you know, AAA triptychs. I would give them away. People would ask me, and I would do that.
That's collectible now.
I've got a few old ones. Yeah.
That's right.
So let's talk.
Yeah. but yes, I've always loved maps, and I've always wanted to work in the academy, and so. I went back to school, a second career, and got a degree.
Here you are.
Yeah, here I am. Yep.
David, what? I mean, I know it's difficult because it's a massive collection, but if you had to tell people what you particularly favor or what you're particularly proud of in that map collection of yours, what rises to the top?
Well, there's a particular small pocket globe that you can hold in your hand. It's 3 inches. And it's from 1731, and it shows California as an island, which they thought we were, and of course we still are, metaphorically though. But they actually thought we were physically an island. So I love that piece. It sits inside a Fishkin case, two halves, two hemispheres that show the whole universe inside the case. Mm. So it's just a fabulous piece. It was a gentleman's toy. But it's so meaningful to people. We have it on exhibit at the center, and sometimes we'll take it out and let people hold it, and it's just having the world in your hands.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And, you know, just comment on what Salim was saying. For us, the digital and the physical go together. It's both and, not either or. We really like to see the paper maps next to their digital versions so that you can explore them. Get things out of the digital. You're never going to smell the digital. You're never going to touch the paper. So having the physical right there is wonderful, at least certainly for those who can come to Stanford.
You don't think – I mean, it's splendid to have them both, as you suggest. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk about paper maps going the way of the warrior or the dinosaurs, and you don't believe it.
Not a bit. No, just the opposite, I think. It's the paper maps, I think, are coming back. Because of the digital GPS, because geo's in our life all the time now. We're being tracked by Google, who knows who else.
As we're speaking here, probably, yeah.
And, no doubt.
Salim, what comes to the top for you in terms
of
the collection?
You know, so I think The fact is, it's a really difficult question simply because there's just an abundance of maps.
It's an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. That's right. It's a universe of maps. It's map heaven, basically. You know, I go to work to map heaven every day. And I mean, several come to mind. I think there's several synergies that have come out of this process. One, of course, is massive collection from David Rumsey and the depth, and it's going to play a massive role in interdisciplinary work, right? So it's not just about cartography or geography. It's about the humanities. It's about social sciences. It's all these things because each of these maps are massive containers of information. That being said, David mentioned maps of California as an island. So we at Stanford have the Glenn McLaughlin collection of maps of California as an island. It's the definitive collection of maps of California as an island. It's about 150-year period where maps were California was considered an island. And one of those is one of my favorites. It's really difficult, but it's by Peter Roos. It's a 1666 map of California as an island. It's gorgeous. We have it on display. We have a very large enlargement on the staircase. So that's one of my favorites. I have others.
Well, you talk about, you use the word gorgeous. I mean, some of these maps are really strikingly beautiful, and one could make a case for an aesthetic sense of maps. I mean, many of the maps, I mean, they're pictorial and they create, well, beauty.
Totally. It's one of the few objects we have that combines art with science and with history. And so they're all rolled into one, and there's so many aspects to the artistic side of map.
Can you give us a little sense of some of these pictorial maps, maybe? Or?
Well, I've been adding, particularly the 20th century, pictorial mapping is a whole wild genre that starts in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and I have a whole blog post online about this. We have about 3,000 of them now, so we have one of the largest collections of them. They're humorous. They're funny. You may remember some as a kid. You know, they have sort of some aspects are quite silly. Some things are, you know, particularly from the 30s, are politically way incorrect in the way that they display us as people. But they're always fascinating, very colorful. Perhaps you can think of some other ones.
I was just going to talk generally with respect to the artistic of maps. So maps, you know, they're sort of curated pictures. So there are a lot of information, but they're curated. Every map, including a pictorial, has a point of view. And that, I think, is amazing. You know, just like a book or an article, all maps have a point of view. And the map being gorgeous, many of them are beautiful, gorgeous, fantastic, is just a bonus and makes you want to go back to it.
We're talking, if you've just joined us, about the Stanford opening of a massive digital map archive to you, the public. Saleh Muhammad is here in studio with us. He's head and curator of the David Rumsey Map Center, and David Rumsey himself with us, founder of the David Rumsey Map Center at Stanford, which once again contains over 150,000 items, including a digital archive of maps. And you just have to kind of get your head around some of these rare maps and the way they used to be made. You can actually go to our website, kqed.org, and see some of what's there. But these paper maps are sort of like paper books. They're going to continue to be with us, despite the talk of their being eclipsed by all of the new technology. And I'm interested in hearing what you out in the public have to say about this, especially this juxtaposition of the old with the new and the technological. Google Earth is making a lot of these great 3D opportunities and laying old maps upon new maps possible. We can talk about that. And you can talk about maybe some maps that you've seen and were struck by. You don't necessarily have to be as passionate about maps as our two guests, but I know many of you have perhaps seen maps and things have remained in your mind or questions. Because we're talking about the whole history of maps here, really, encompassing all of that. And you have to kind of get your head around the way maps used to be made with just a compass and a few other rather basic instruments. If you'd like to join us, we invite you to do that now. Please feel free to join the conversation. The toll-free number is available to you. That number is 866-733-6786. Particularly if you have a map that you once saw that you want to bring to public attention here or want to find out more about, join the program. Again, you can do that now at 866-733-6786. Other ways you can communicate with us, you can email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but certainly want to hear from you and hear your thoughts and any questions or comments you might have. There's a whole sense of map collectors out there, David. I mean, you're kind of a, I guess you call themselves map nerds and all the rest of those kinds of things. Yeah, it's a kind of subpopulation.
Yes, indeed, a pretty big subpopulation actually. We have a California Map Society that has been really helpful. They're founding donors to the Map Center, and they'll be holding their annual meetings in the Map Center starting next year. There's map collectors societies in Washington, New York, Chicago, Seattle. We're all over, Michael.
There's also the sense that many have that this is all moving to – I did one of these shows with the Oculus Rift people, and I put on the goggles and everything. What do you think about that, Salim, that maps are headed toward, you know, this interactivity and visual stuff with the goggles?
Well, I think – well, we do have an Oculus Rift at the center, and where it's a grand experiment. Maybe, you know, we do now maps in 3D. We do maps – well, obviously 2D. There's the scanning. There's the georeferencing. There's all of these things that we do with maps, but maybe the Oculus Rift will take us to the next thing with maps. There is Second Life. Maps are in Second Life. David Rumsey has an island over there. That can be an Oculus Rift, and it's coming fairly soon. So yes, there's a lot of that going on.
And let me also say that we don't have the maps on our site. What we have are the links to the center site and David's personal map site on our website. Could you just – I want to get our callers on. Lots of people want to talk with us. But somebody explain to me how the Google Earth mapping works at the center, David?
Well – there's a couple of ways it works. At the center, we can display on our large screens all the maps that we have and that are overlaid on Google Earth, about 1,000. So what you do is you're basically turning the map on, but it's been geo-referenced, which means it's been coordinates have been added to its basic data. So the Google Earth knows where to put it, and it puts it in the correct place. So, for instance, we have a map of San Francisco from 1859 that shows Mission Bay is a bay. So where UCSF is now is all water. And we can show that in Google Earth and use the transparency slider to show all of Mission Bay's new buildings and the proposed stadium, you know, floating out there in water. And it's very powerful for people to see that visually, even though you may read it in a book that Mission Bay existed, to see it is amazing. So those are the kinds of things we can do, and they are very affecting.
It's Brave New World again, isn't it? Let me bring some callers on here. Frederick, you're first up. Welcome, Frederick. You're on the program.
Hi. Listen, thanks for taking my call. Maps have been a big part of my life. I grew up in the 50s. My dad was a geologist. We never flew anywhere. We drove everywhere, and it was all paper maps. And I think that became a big part of me becoming a graphic designer. And in the last 12 or 15 years, I've started collecting old, unusual maps, and I've run across something. I'm sure Rumsey knows about it, but Ruth Taylor White, and sort of an illustrator and cartographer, did some very interesting books. And she did the famous book called A Gay Geography that is now basically unavailable as a whole book. I happen to have a copy of it. Booksellers have been selling them, and people have been cutting them up and framing them.
I think David Rumsey is familiar with the book. He's nodding his head here.
Oh, yes. I love Ruth Taylor White. I have hundreds of her maps. I have the whole Gay Geography book, text and everything, on the website. Yes, people cut them up, which is unfortunate, but it does have the ability to give individuals who can't afford to buy the whole book at least a chance to have one or two individual maps. I'm so glad that you enjoy her work. I think she is one of the pillars of the pictorial cartography that I mentioned before. And I'm constantly on the lookout for new maps by her that I don't have. So do let us know. I'll put a plug in if you run into any.
And thank you, Frederick. In fact, I think that plug goes for anybody out there who has discovered some old maps. You would love to hear from them.
Absolutely.
Right? Is it like, I mean, some of these are really very valuable. I used to be a stamp collector, edition of baseball cards and other things like that. And, you know, you'd have some of these rare stamps from places like British Guiana that would be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. These maps are pretty valuable, a lot of them. I mean, in terms of the market and what the market
very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the things, even at Stanford, I mean, we will be unable to purchase a lot of these maps. And that's where I think cartographic digital philanthropy comes in. You talked earlier about collectors. One of the things that we do is we speak to these collectors at Stanford and ask if we could borrow their collections and have them scan and we give it back to them.
It's a good tax write-off.
It is. But what they actually get back their maps. We just borrow the collection, we scan it and make a digital-only collection.
They give them to Stanford. They can write it off.
That's right.
Well,
we try that too.
Let me get Janet on next. Janet, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hey, thanks. Great program. Wanted to just mention, when I moved to the Bay Area in the 80s, my sister, who lives in Noe Valley and has lived there for many, many years, first thing she did was she gave me a map of San Francisco, and she said, okay, this is how you're going to find your way around. And thank God she did, because I was here for a few years, and then the earthquake hit, and the structure fell down, and I had to learn it all over again. And in an age when we are so disconnected from nature and using GPS to find our way around from the natural world, I still have that map to this day, and I really appreciate it.
And a good story to tell. Thank you for that. Good to hear from you. We'll hear from another caller who's joining us. Noah, you're on. Morning.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So first, I wanted to say that I'm definitely a map lover, and I'm probably guilty of staring at a map for hours while I'm supposed to be working. But it seems like, you know, all of the land has really been mapped out so thoroughly. I wonder how much is our efforts moving towards mapping out the floor of the ocean, and when can we expect to have, you know, a detailed map of the floor of the ocean that it's not just topography, but all of the other interesting aspects?
Yeah, that's a great question. First, you have to get to the depths of the ocean, I mean, which we haven't managed to do yet. But, I mean, we're mapping Mars, right? All these things are open for mapping. David Rumsey?
Yeah, I think it's a question really of how quickly the satellites will be able to read the bathymetric depths. It's called bathymetry. There's a lot that has been mapped already. We have a lot on my website and at the center, particularly the work of Marie Tharp, one of the pioneer woman cartographer. There's not that many women cartographers.
Very few, I imagine.
And Marie is fantastic.
Here's a comment, and then I want to get to some questions and more of our callers. A listener writes, I'm a paper conservator here in the Bay Area and have worked extensively on treating paper maps and globes, old and new, from the miniature to the oversized. Throughout my career in the field, I can truly say that treating these works are some of the highlights of my conservation duties because of their pure magic and energy. And a couple questions. Are there any maps of the gold rush and various mining claims? A listener wants to know.
Oh my goodness! We have lots of those maps. I mean, when David gave his collection, obviously we have all of his maps. The beginnings of maps and libraries actually comes from Vranner Earth Sciences and Earth Sciences Library and Map Collections. All of the contemporary maps are still there. So really, we have a couple of map centers at Stanford. But from there and the collection, we have lots of gold maps. There's a class taught by a geology professor at Stanford, very popular on the gold rush, uses our collection extensively. And now with David's, I mean, the world is your oyster, really. I mean,
it's more than that. It's heaven for you.
It's heaven for me.
Sally Muhammad is the head and curator of the David Rumsey Map Center. And a listener wants to know, as we look back using modern technology, how accurate are some of these historical maps? Actually, surprisingly accurate, aren't they, David?
Surprisingly accurate. Yeah. When you think that they had no satellites, they had very little equipment whatsoever. So a lot of it was what we just call reckoning that they did from ships. So extraordinarily accurate. We do see inaccuracies, though,
of course,
that get very interesting, like when they got things wrong.
And another caller joins us, and this is Diane, who's in the Tenderloin. Diane, welcome.
Hi. I love maps, but I can't afford to buy maps. The best place to look at old maps at the main library. on the upper floors. They have wonderful maps, huge maps, small maps, old maps, but they have some wonderful maps at the main library.
Good hit, Diane. There are some great maps there. Yeah. Thank you for that call.
I'll just second that because I've collaborated quite a bit with the main library on their map collections and digitized several of them for them, and they're fantastic, in the history room particularly.
And here's David. David, you're on with us on Forum. Good morning.
Hi. This is David in San Leandro. I've got maps that I do, that I have a book of called The Atlas of Experience, and I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of that by two Dutch geographers, I think it's. And then that part two of my question is, do you do such a thing as maps of cultures? That instead of nation borders and things like that, the borders would be very different if it was based on cultures. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. David Rumsey, nodding your head again.
Don't know about the first atlas, but we'll definitely start looking for it after the show is over. Sounds really interesting. The mapping culture will be really a lot of that in the collection. That's mapping ethnic groups, mapping language groups. We call that generally thematic mapping. It's not political. And we have a huge amount of that dating back into the 1700s.
Do you have a lot of atlases?
Oh,
goodness. My goodness. So I think one of David Rumsey's collection's strengths is atlases. And so the collection has all the runs of lots of atlases. And so you can see the same map over and over again over the decades. One of the things I think bears mentioning is that what David Rumsey did and librarians are doing all over now is that maybe people aren't necessarily interested in the atlas. You can go find an atlas, but maybe you're really interested in the map within the atlas. So if you add metadata to the map within the atlas and make it searchable and findable, that suddenly makes it a lot more valuable.
I got to ask you, David, about a cool new Japanese World War II map that you just acquired, maybe one of the only ones in the world.
Yes. Showing that to Irene last night. It's fantastic.
Yeah, she was excited about it.
Oh, she was. And I got very excited again just seeing her whole excitement. It's a very small map, maybe about 12 inches across. It's actually celebrating the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
From the Japanese point of view, and the potential upcoming bombing of California.
Not the island, the state. We've got just seconds left here, but a big question. I consider myself, Casey writes, spatially challenged, but my four-year-old son is already quite a map geek. He finds airports on the maps. He is constantly looking at the maps on the iPad and our phones. You have advice for kids interested in maps? Come down to Stanford, right?
That's right.
And keep at it.
That's right.
And don't feel guilty.
This guy's been at it since he was 4 feet tall, as he said before. Thank you both. It's been a real pleasure to have you here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can go online at kqed.org again and see the personal map collection. Thank you for being a part of this morning's program and for all of us here at KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.